Hi everyone, I'm Gary Naughton. I'd like to welcome you to our presentation. You're listening to the Progressive Commentary Hour. This program is devoted to serious topics with individuals who've committed themselves to showing us the truth of our actions. More often than not, these are not covered in any objective way or at all by the official left and right media. But it is important that we know about these issues. Today, our issue is the erosion of civil liberties, human rights, and the demise of our democracy. My panelist will be Dr. Peter Dale Scott. He is a former professor of English at the University of California, Berkeley, where he also was the co-founder of the Peace and Conflict Studies Program. He is a recognized poet, a former Canadian diplomat, and a scholar. He is an author on both domestic and international political issues, and he is the author of some very important works, including The Road to 9/11, published in 2007, which deals with the geopolitical events that led to 9/11 and the history of the U.S. government's past cover-ups, criminal acts, and deceiving of the public. He is also one of the witnesses to appear at the international hearings on 9/11 in Toronto. His website is peterdalescott.net. He will be joined by Professor Peter Phillips. Professor Phillips is professor of sociology at Sonoma State University in California, where he teaches courses in political sociology, media censorship, and the sociology of power in the media. He is the former founding director of Project Censored, which, as many of you know, is an internationally known research program and watch organization that annually identifies the most censored news stories not appearing in the mainstream media. He's written many op-ed pieces on investigations. He has written for Counterpunch, Common Dreams, Social Policy, Free Inquiry, and he also has done extensive conversations on this topic. He is the author of Censored 2012, The Top Censored Stories of 2010 and 11. His website is projectcensored.org. And concluding our discussion today will be Stephen Ledman. He is a progressive economist. He is an investigative journalist. He tackles some of the most critical issues in the world. And he has degrees from Harvard University, University of Pennsylvania's Wharton School of Business, and has worked in major organizations throughout the many decades he's been out there. He has authored How Wall Street Fleeces America, Privatized Banking, Government Collusion, and Class Warfare. He also hosts one of the most popular programs on the Progressive Radio Network, the Ledman News Hour, heard every Thursday at 11 a.m. and Saturday and Sunday at 1 p.m. Nice to have all you with us today.
Thank you very much.
All right.
Glad to be here.
What I'm going to do is this. I'm going to do an extended introduction, as I want people to get a context of why I believe this is so important, this topic. After I share this extended introduction, and what will also be included in this extended introduction is some of the latest information that may not seem connected but actually is to our topic. I will also be sharing a commentary from Professor James Tracy, who could not be with us, but he has something very important to talk about. It is entitled Police State USA, The Paranoid Style of American Governance. And Professor Tracy is a professor of media studies at Florida Atlantic University. But first, here are some of the facts that you may or may not know of if you're listening and watching. And you can watch today's program being video streamed by going to progressiveradionetwork.com or garynaughton.com. Between 2008 and 2010, over 6,600 travelers, mostly Americans, had Homeland Security literally search the full content of their electronic devices, meaning their laptops. Starting in 2010, the FBI started to raid homes of peace activists. Now, these peace activists had committed no crime. They had at no time crossed over that line into any criminal activity. They were merely identified as having participated in different peace activities and protests. Also, a large number of anti-war organizers were arrested, their homes raided, Now, that all falls under the rubric of material support for terrorism, meaning if they are writing and producing any literature over the internet, or a book, an article, an op-ed, the New York Times, if they suggest other people should protest the government, that now can be construed as material support for terrorism. How in the world does that have to deal with terrorism? We will ask our panelists when I conclude this. There are 1,271 governmental organizations, 1,931 private companies working on programs related to counterterrorism and homeland security and intelligence. They are in 10,000 separate locations across the United States, and almost all are secret. Since 9/11, no less than 263 intelligence and counterintelligence organizations have been created or reorganized. There are currently 854,000 people who hold top security clearances and have the right to participate in spying on Americans, reading our emails, listening to our phone calls. There are now 33 new building complexes under construction in the Washington, D.C. area designated for top secret intelligence work. Together, this is equivalent to 3 Pentagons or 22 U.S. Capitol buildings. Now, why should you be concerned? According to the ACLU, warrantless wiretapping, Bush's executive order authorizing the National Security Agency warrantless wiretapping program, expanding in 2005 to tap into domestic calls. Obama campaigned against that, but then voted to legalize the program and give government and telecoms immunity after they had clearly and unequivocally broken the law. So they decriminalized their criminal activity. That, to many people, was tantamount to taking a bank robber who had committed 1 million bank robberies and suddenly deciding that bank robbery shouldn't be a crime anymore, and hence no actions were brought against any of the people who participated. Then there's the situation of torture, kidnapping, and detention. The government has the power to designate anyone, including any American, as an enemy combatant for any reasons that it chooses without sharing how that person was selected, what they did, what crimes they've committed, how are they indeed a threat to the United States or its security. At no point in any of the decision-making process does President Obama or any future president have to tell anyone how they came to their decisions. There is also indefinite military detentions of U.S. citizens, including the 2012 bill for Pentagon spending. There's growing surveillance as a society. Rapid expansion of security departments for data collection and storage and tracking and information mining and surveillance on all Americans. Also being done through the Joint Terrorism Task Forces, which are based on government-private corporation partnerships. Here is a question that I'll be asking my panelists. Knowing that corporate America puts profits first, and knowing that they have to have lobbyists and former legislators or people who had worked within the military industrial intelligence system to open doors for them and paying very large consulting or sponsoring or lobbying fees, then whose interest are these massive amounts of new contracts supporting? The security of America, or just a perpetual another form of bureaucracy, one laid on top of another, on top of another, on top of another? The abuse of the Patriot Act. Non-citizens can be jailed on mere suspicion without any charges and detained indefinitely. Subject peaceful and lawful advocacy organizations are going to be and are now surveyed. They are harassed and criminal actions taken against them. There is a barring of the press and public from immigration hearings. Congress extended key provisions of the Patriot Act in May of 2011. The majority voted in the Senate to support it, and almost all the Democrats did. Government secrecy, weakening the Freedom of Information Act, increasing in secret agencies, secret committees in Congress, secret courts to keep government activities away from the public scrutiny. The Real ID Act of 2005, which created the foundation for the national ID cards. Driver's licenses at state levels are being linked to databases shared with every federal, state, and local government agency. The no-fly and selectee list. Since 9/11, 720,000 names are now on their list. They even had Senator Ted Kennedy as a potential terrorist on their list. Political spying. The FBI and Department of Defense conducting their own spying activities on law-abiding citizens, including Greenpeace, the Quakers, People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals, and many others. This is your FBI engaged in criminal activity, and yet they're able to do this with complete impunity. The use of surveillance drones to spy on Americans. Drones are requested by Orlando police for the GOP convention. Attacks on academic freedom. Provisions in the Patriot Act for censoring at the border to keep scholars with perceived political views out of the United States. If you are a scholar, if you're a Nobel laureate, if you've written anything that anyone in any of those agencies, and if you're one of the 800 and almost 900,000 individuals working in the intelligence system, and you deem that something someone has written is offensive or threatening, that person can be kept out of the United States and hence from sharing their views in person in this country. Attacks also through the Military Commission Act of 2006. It created a separate system of justice for non-citizens and denies them the right to challenge their detention in court. The act also gives the president the right to decide who is and who is not an enemy of the country. Criminalizing whistleblowers. In 2011, the SHIELD Act in the House amended the Espionage Act to make publishing classified information in investigative journalism a criminal offense. Hence, what at one time this president stated he supported, those speaking out when they know that a criminal activity has been committed, now this is the president who is willing to arrest, detain, and remove that person from our society. Violent Radicalization and Homeland Terrorism Prevention Act of 2007. This broadens the definition of terrorism to include political activity of dissident groups. This is the modern version of COINTELPRO. Targeting killings of U.S. citizens. President Obama now has the right, without challenge, and with no legal authority above him, to decide if he wants to kill any American, and he can do so at his whim and leisure. There is no one who can now not be challenged with a drone or with some black op operation. Hard to imagine, he has the power. And according to those who are concerned about civil liberties, no one should have the power to take away habeas corpus, constitutional rights, without at least notifying someone that you are a suspect, you're a person of interest, we have some suspicions, and allowing that person to defend themselves in a court of law. Hence today, based upon the degeneracy of corporate America, who will do anything for a profit, imagine then putting the future of our security in the hands of people who have had a history of being serial offenders. How do I know this? How can I say this without seeming shrill or biased? Because I hired a group of scholars, including legal scholars, and I paid them to find the answer to two questions. How many people within just the pharmaceutical industry have been found guilty of crimes or paid fines and settlements because of the injury that they had committed by prescription drugs? I then took the same effort at Wall Street. I wanted to know how many investment banks had settled claims with or without acknowledging guilt, but settled claims brought to them. I wanted to know that these were criminal complaints, and the amounts were in the hundreds of thousands of lawsuits settled for the pharmaceutical industries, hundreds of thousands of lawsuits settled by Wall Street firms, sometimes causing hundreds of thousands of deaths in the pharmaceutical industry, and yet not a single person has ever seen the inside of a jail, no matter what crimes they committed on behalf of Wall Street during our investigations when these lawsuits were settled, or from the pharmaceutical industry, and that includes the a notorious a Vioxx settlement where 60,000 to 400,000 Americans were killed because of Vioxx that they knew was dangerous, and yet after paying $5.85 billion, they did not have to acknowledge guilt. They were identified, therefore, and their stock went up. Now, how many of these firms are now a part of, directly or indirectly, or have a financial control in, or leading investment in, the security agencies that now can use those ties, those insider information sources, to the advantage of their company and against someone else? And what if anyone has a personal bias against someone, against a Chris Hedges, against my own guest, Stephen Ledman, has been extremely outspoken, as has Peter Phillips, and has also Peter Dale Scott. What if someone didn't like them? Do you realize the power we've given to silence individuals? So that's what happens when you have that. We also have arrest of witness recording police actions. Today, it is against the law for you or any journalist to record audio or video of any police that are doing anything abusive. If a policeman is doing something that you feel is a violation and you were to film that person, you would join 30 journalists who have been arrested so far. 12 states have adapted an anti-eavesdropping law where you cannot film and you cannot record the police in any action. What would have happened then with the Rodney King video? We wouldn't have it today under Obama. Little ironic, isn't it? Perhaps the main template for the erosion of civil liberties and human rights is this question. How has the war on terror implicated us as Americans and impacted the rule of law? The freedom of association, the freedom of information, the freedom of speech, the right to legal representation, the freedom from unreasonable searches, the right to speedy and public trial, the right to liberty, habeas corpus, posse comitatus, TSA body scanners, Obama's kill list, prosecution of whistleblowers, FISA Amendment Acts, Patriot Act Section 505, which permits the FBI to search library and business records without probable cause. The FISA Amendment has eroded rights to freedom from unreasonable search and seizures. The prosecution of whistleblowers and discard for whistleblower protection rules. Obama's kill right, the right of president to have any American assassinated without any repercussions. And also the continuation of racial, ethnic, and religious profiling, despite official policies against it. The TS body scanners oppose privacy and health problems. Posse comitatus, which forbids the use of military against U.S. citizens, is gone. There's an increased militarization of domestic policing, intelligence gathering. Habeas corpus is dead. The right to liberty. Americans may be jailed without being charged or being able to confront witnesses against them. The right to a speedy trial and public trial. Government may jail Americans indefinitely without trial. Freedom from unreasonable searches. The government may search and seize American papers and effects without probable cause or assist terror investigations. The right to legal representation. The government may monitor federal prison jail house conversations between attorneys and clients and deny lawyers to Americans used by crimes, and the freedom of speech. Government may prosecute librarians or keepers of any other records if they tell anyone that the government subpoenaed information related to a terrorist investigation. That is my concern. I told you it was extensive overview, but we are taking whatever time is necessary. The program may go a couple hours tonight, but let us now go to my guest as I've given why I'm concerned. Let us begin with Peter Dale Scott. Professor Scott, would you take on the issues at hand and share your concerns, your insights, now that we have some idea of what we're faced with?
Yes, well, I think that's a very good survey, and I think your concern about it is fully justified. You mentioned the profit motives, and when we have this surveillance now, which is very big business, you said that it's accurate, that it is being militarized. America is now a military area, NORTHCOM, just like South America is a military area, SOUTHCOM. And that means that the Posse Comitatus Acts are out the window because we have permanent not only the military involved in things like surveillance, but also there's a permanent brigade waiting to deal with any protest, anti-war, whatever, that gets out of hand. The profit motive is a big part of this. We have private, what I call private intelligence corporations, which are compiling files on people. They meet in fusion centers with local law enforcement and on the state level, and the military, the private corporations, and the law enforcement people share their data. And, of course, if you put a profit motive in, then the bigger the better. It's just like having private prisons has led to cases where people would be being sent to jail just to help the profits of the private prisons. One factor that I think we need to add to all this, and that is that way back at the time of Vietnam, the Pentagon did an assessment of how they lost that war, and their self-estimate of what happened is that they lost the war in America. Oliver North said this in his Iran-Contra hearings, that the war was lost in the streets of Washington. And so a great deal of the planning is directed primarily against making sure that there will never again be a protest movement that can stop American involvement in Iraq or Afghanistan or whatever, which I think is very, very unhealthy for America, because the historians of this country someday will be glad that the anti-war movement helped to end a war which should not have been fought in the first place. So now we have a huge system. You were right to bring in the pharmaceutical side of it, and the chemical companies. It's one huge machine. They share lobbyists. They all contribute funds to candidates of both parties, so you get secure majorities in both the House and the Senate for the laws which they really wanted passed. All this began, I believe, with the declaration of with the invocation of what they call continuity of government procedures right on September the 11th, 2001, and was made legal by the proclamation of an emergency on September the 14th, 2001. That emergency, by law, can only last for a year, but it's been prolonged year after year after year. And it was very disappointing and a sign of bad things to come when President Obama continued this artificial emergency. What is the emergency? We've had time to time scares like the underwear bomber and so on, but surely the cases that we know about don't begin to justify what's happened to this country domestically. 100,000 troops in Afghanistan to pursue what they officially said was 60 members of Al-Qaeda. You have overkill in every direction, and it's a way of a system keeping itself in power and making sure that the American people cannot use their democratic rights to change a really insane and dangerous policy, which, if not checked, it runs the risk of leading to another world war.
I appreciate those opening insights. I'll come back in a few moments to you, Dr. Scott. Professor Peter Phillips, would you give us your concern, your overview, and give us some examples of what you see as how this literally could impact a person who is not paying attention to it at this moment, who is lost in some form of other distraction in their life?
Well, first off, I would like to say that it's not incorrect to use the word fascism. Naomi Wolf wrote about this and highlighted what the signs of that were and the corporate power. You're saying that there's 1,200 government organizations, 1,000 private, that are interlocked in terms of anti-terrorist organizations. So this is contractors, close to 1 million people involved. This is a police state. And the number one story that was voted by all of our national judges for Project Censored this year and all the 20-some universities that participate is the emerging police state in the United States. So that doesn't get covered. This whole program is not covered. These topics are not covered in the corporate media. So most people see little bits of this. They see little glimpses of this, but they have no idea the magnitude, or that the ICE holding cells all over the country can disappear people and transfer them around, and you don't even know where people are. This is a state of runaway capitalism and increased control of all the citizens here. It's terrifying in many ways for those of us that follow this closely. We really are in desperate times. And both parties, Republican and Democrat, are participatory in this, endorse it. So what you really have, not only in Congress, but throughout the world, is this 1%, the transnational corporate class of the world, are being protected by, and that's protecting of capital flow anywhere in the world, is being protected by the U.S. NATO military industrial media empire. And I add media in there because they are a propaganda fog machine for the 1%. So they don't cover, they don't tell us these dangers, they don't tell us the process whereby people could be arrested and simply disappeared. Everything Hitler did in the 30s, leading up to World War II and the attacks, everything that he did was legal because the German government passed laws that allowed that. So we're passing laws here in the United States to suspend habeas corpus, allow the president to designate people as terrorists. The passage of the 2012 Defense Authorization Act allows the military to detain indefinitely without trial any U.S. citizen the government labels as a terrorist or accessory to terrorism. So that definition is so broad it can be literally anyone, anywhere in the country and anywhere in the world. And not just labeling them, but killing them is now an acceptable process. So, yes, we are in desperate times, and those times, of course, demand revolutionary measures, responses of non-cooperation in massive ways for millions of people.
I appreciate your overview, Professor Phillips. We're going to hold our comments for our final panelist, Stephen Ledman, for the next hour. And I want to focus just in this hour on you two gentlemen, because I'm going to take his interview in a little different direction. Following up, Professor Phillips, you have had a chance to bring forward in your publication some of the cutting-edge journalism. Almost never do you see that covered in the mainstream, and certainly not covered in the way that it is covered in the stories that you review. Give us an idea, at least from your perspective, why the mainstream media, the Los Angeles Times, the Washington Post, the New York Times, Miami Herald, Boston Globe, and all these others, why they're not willing to come forward and state what you two have both stated tonight, that we have a police state at hand. We are engaged in allowing a relatively small group of corporations, with the influence of ALEC and other lobbying efforts, to control legislation, to control policy, and then to fund that, creating their own private public corporations that then determine what is lawful in behavior and what is not lawful in behavior. How come they're not doing this?
Corporate media, number one, has a bottom line to make profit. Number two, they have an idea that they want to continue to present credibility, that they're fair and balanced in bringing the news to that's important to the people in the United States. So they're covering, issues around the world and different things, but they cover them from the perspective of the Pentagon, from the perspective of the White House. So the people cited as the experts, the how news stories are framed and how they're come to be understood, and even what topics are covered, are coming from their partnership, and it's a very symbiotic relationship with the most powerful people in the world. And that is the one who buys the advertisements that they're selling eyeballs to advertisers. And the idea is to keep us in a kind of a entertained fog state of being, where we continue to go shopping, we continue to buy products, and that helps keep the economy afloat. and any resistance whatsoever is denigrated or labeled as extremists, and they refuse to cover in any kind of a macro sense everything that's happened. Probably everything you mentioned, habeas corpus, wireless wiretaps, at some point gets mentioned, but it never gets put in context. So, we can tolerate, how can we tolerate U.S. NATO forces killing people in over 100 countries in the world, private assassins, drones, millions of civilian deaths in Iraq alone, and that, as we see, and a 40-year decline in working people's standards here in the United States. They know that it's inevitable that the inner cities are going to erupt. That's why we have a North American command that Peter Dale talked about. They're going to ready to occupy any city with military force in the United States within a 24-hour notice. I mean, that's they're in stage. They're ready to arrest thousands of people and put them in huge military bases where, you know, they can be held and private prisons. So that's all in the works, and that's certainly, they're getting ready. They, meaning the powerful 1%, the policy elites of this country, the power elite that C. Wright Mills talked about, they are prepared and ready for resistance, and they do not intend to lose.
One more follow-up question on that line for you, Professor Phillips. Keith Overman repeatedly would challenge in some very articulate and brilliant, insightful commentaries Bush's follies. He had a segment of his program called Bushed. He also did some of the best commentaries against what Bush was doing that I've heard. Now that he had Obama, he was mute. He would have on Obama supporters. He would have on the top leadership of the Democratic Party. Nancy Pelosi was a regular guest. Barney Frank, a regular guest. And others, regular guests. Then I started to see Rachel Maddow and people from MSNBC, the same thing. They would target what was wrong with the Republican side. They would not be as voracious against the Democrats. And I saw them both as being two heads, the corporate head of the Republican Party, the corporate head of the Democratic Party, at virtually indifferent of how the outcome would represent a fall in quality of life and standard of living for the average American. And yet, we don't have the official left, and it's the official Democratic spokesperson to the media, talking as you've been talking. In fact, they would say just the opposite. Keith Urban repeatedly denigrated the conspiratorists, nuts, you know, calling them a nuts. So when individuals, credible individuals, talked about inconsistencies in the 9/11 official reports. Now, these were scientists, these were physicists, these were engineers. They had no politic involved. They simply said the official report was wrong. Instead of bringing them on and saying, prove to us that there was something wrong. Show us your evidence. Show us your forensic evidence. And then having maybe a jurist on who could challenge him. That would be legitimate. Instead, they were all backhanded by Keith Urban as if they were conspiratorial nuts. Then if someone suggested that there were detention camps being built, conspiratorial nuts on both the right and left. Bill O'Reilly, Sean Hannity, Laura Ingraham, Michael Savage. They all think everything that is suggestive that the government is taking away our rights as conspiratorial nuts. As a result, then we have to ask a basic question. Who then is going to go out there and see whether or not there are inconsistencies in official reports? Are there detention camps? And if there are detention camps, how many are there? What is their purpose? Who are they supposed to hold? Is it supposed to be for illegal aliens? If so, why do we have less illegal aliens now than before? And what are we supposed to do with all these? But we're not given a straight answer. All we're given are media suggesting that an official answer, it would challenge everything that anyone such as yourself would state. So could you give us this? Could you tell us what does it mean for you personally when you are not invited in, or the journalists you work for invited in to present your information, no matter how alarmist it may seem, in the context of having documentation and scholarship to verify and factually accord it. When you're not even given that chance, you're simply backhanded as if you're a conspiratorial nut. And by the way, that even happens in some of the programming on Pacifica stations. I can assure you of that. I've myself had to counter that. So give us that idea.
Well, we did get Pacifica on the 10th anniversary of 9/11 to do a 9-hour special all that day, where 2 hours of it were debates between 9/11 government critics and people who defended that. That was kind of a first for Pacifica.
That was a great breakthrough. That was a great breakthrough, yes.
It was really, and it was Mickey Huff and myself that really pushed that at KPFA, along with station managers, willing to accept that we would have an honest debate. Now, Amy Goodman had gone there a little bit when she had David Ray Griffin on. She did have the Loose Change fellas on, but she did it in a debate context. So rarely in Pacific or on the left is there any entertainment of an hour-long, two-hour-long interview by experts, by scholars, around issues that have been deemed by the corporate media as conspiratorial. So our goal is to sort of redefine what you know, and rehabilitate the word conspiracy. Every corporate board, every one of these corporations that you talked about who are anti-terrorist groups and, you know, working in that capacity, every one of those boards meets on a regular basis to plan how to maximize their profit. They're called business plans. Now, sometimes those business plans involve bribing foreign officials, making decisions that negatively impact citizens here in this country, and could, in fact, be illegal. Those are conspiracies. Conspiracies happen all the time. Now, exposing those is what corporate media or media and journalism historically was about. You ask who benefits, who loses, who wins, and who decides policy issues, where the money flows, how do these decisions get made, and that's what journalism is about. And we don't have that in the United States anymore. We don't have, you know, George Seldes is really making those kinds of questions in serious ways. If you do that, if you deviate from more than just humorous criticism of Bush or anyone else inside of the major talk shows and the major media, you're out of a job. You're just gone. And unfortunately, that's really it's a terrible situation, which is something that Project Censored is very much engaged in addressing. We have a website, we put out a book, we have newsletters, and we get over 400,000 unique views on our sites monthly. And there's a lot of other groups around that are doing that. So there's plenty of valuable information available for citizens interested in these topics. And Gary, you do a really good job of bringing these forward. You're introduction to this was excellent. You've really laid out some of the key issues that we're faced with.
Okay, let me jump over to Dr. Scott. Thank you for that answer, Peter. Dr. Scott, when you see true believers of their own concepts and ideologies, such as Bill O'Reilly, the most popularly watched person on television and cable, and listen to Rush Limbaugh, the most popular voice on conservative radio, and what you're hearing are people who deny that they are having any of their rights eviscerated. To the contrary, on the one hand, they wave a flag saying protect the Constitution. They have all these people on talking about patriotism and patriots and the founding fathers. They're constantly intoning the founding fathers as the models, and yet today every one of our founding fathers would be on a FBI watch list if not already assassinated or arrested, because they all engaged in what was considered the time sedition. In fact, the King of England was to have them arrested and tried and hung or shot for sedition. And we have a Sedition Act in the United States. In fact, this president has recently invoked that in one particular case. So when you see these people, does it ever challenge you on an emotional gut level to say, how in the world can you stand there and be so hypocritical to say you care about our rights and Constitution and our historic founding fathers, and yet everything that's happening today goes directly against what they represented, and you're actually supporting it. You're promoting fascism in America. You're promoting taking away our constitutional rights and tearing it up. And yet your audience believes that you're a great defender of something that you're an absolute hypocrite to. Those are my feelings, not yours. I wanted to share that and get your response, please.
Well, first of all, I'm afraid I don't think I ever have listened to Rush Limbaugh or watched Bill O'Reilly, but yes, I know the kind of things they say. You know, I actually had 4 years in government. It was the Canadian government. But I saw for myself and was alienated by the way in which you get people are conditioned to think and talk in certain ways inside the machine. And that's true of bureaucrats, that they, if they want to get ahead, and most of them do, then they know that there are certain things that they have to say and certain things they must never mention. The Kennedy assassination, for example, your career is finished in Washington if you begin to show an interest in an event which, whatever you say about it, affected the political succession in this country. And that applies to journalists as well. That there's, in fact, you see a great deal of people going from the media into government, from government into the media. It is more and more going from the army into the military-industrial complex and going from there into finance, Wall Street. It's all one big system, and all of them must think in certain ways and must not think about other things in certain ways, to the extent that they're not even aware that they're doing it. They just become totally conditioned to this. Now, you could probably make the opposite argument and say that those of us who are outside protesting also have our conditioned responses and so on. Maybe that is, but we are always listening to what the government is saying, and the government is not listening to us. And not only that, but I think it was a very alarming new development, and I think it started under Obama, that the State Department actually set up an office whose job it was to combat conspiracy theories, to persuade people that what happened on 9/11, well, it was a conspiracy theory of 19 Arabs, but nothing outside of that. And for a while, they were actively promoting the idea that Lee Harvey Oswald did it and did it alone. But this proved so ridiculous, I think they dropped that part of it. But this is thought control. This is the bureaucracy not only conditioning itself to think in certain ways, but taking measures to make the rest of the country think the same way. The DEA also, a big part of their budget, is devoted to combating the idea that we should legalize marijuana, even though this would do more than any other single step to take the profit out of the warring cartels in Mexico. So it's a question of all thought, all of us. Our thought is socially conditioned, and there is a great gap appearing between the independent thinkers, those of us on the outside, and those on the inside who condition themselves to think the right way and say the right things and avoid the right topics in order to get ahead in this colossal machine thing. I'm going to take issue a bit with Peter Phillips. And I don't want to make too much out of it. But the trouble with bringing in fascism is that there was a kind of ritualized violence with fascism, both in Italy and in Germany, Kristallnacht and the Night of the Long Knives and that sort of thing. And that aspect of fascism we haven't seen. We haven't seen stormtroopers in the streets. So I think it's better just to label this what it is. It's a war machine. It's dedicated to domination of the rest of the world and suppression of all the people who agree with, by the way, agree with the founding fathers that America should take care primarily of its own government and not try to rule everyone else.
All right, I'm going to have a follow-up question, but before I do that, let me give you two examples of what is happening that the media will not touch. And once you write something like this, you are then on a list, a watch list. This is from Will Potter from the website Green. I'm not sure what it is. GreenTheNewRed.com, and it says this: Freedom of Information request reveals FBI domestic terrorism training material on activists. Quote, newly released FBI presentations show the flawed, misleading information the government is using to train agents to identify and investigate domestic terrorists, groups such as animal rights activists and environmentalists. Among the more troubling portions of the training materials are warnings of activists using the Freedom of Information Act itself, engaging in non-violent civil disobedience and gathering in coffee shops. The domestic terrorism training materials were obtained through a Freedom of Information Act by ACLU. They offer additional insights into the disturbing pattern of the FBI actively misrepresenting political activists as terrorists and manufacturing domestic terrorist threats where none exist, akin to the notorious COINTEL program under J. Edgar Hoover. And then it goes on to talk about how the new recruits in the FBI are told that the Greens, people in the environmental movement, quote, individuals should get back to nature. So people believing in getting back to nature who, quote, meet on college campuses, coffee shops, internet cafes, their criminal activity includes civil disobedience, where people lock arms together. This called sleeping dragons. But now, this is the interesting point, they are, quote, paranoid, security conscious, and the FBI has infiltrated their groups and is orchestrating them, in the case of the Cleveland-made day terrorist, to actually create criminal activity. And so now, if they resist home foreclosures, they're terrorists. If they create community gardens, they're terrorists. And many other activities not mentioned by the Bureau. So could you imagine that today, and this is where I would have to suggest that it may be premature, Dr. Scott, to think that because we have not seen jackboots in the street, that we will not see that. That we have the temperament, we have the methods, we have the camps, we have the laws, and now we have from their own information manual that if you are wanting a community garden, if you are locking arms in protest, if you are an environmentalist, if you are doing any of these things, now you're on their list, and you're now being termed a terrorist in the teaching. So they're conditioning, as you rightly said, a mind control. They're now conditioning all the people in the system. Oh, that person wants a community garden, terrorist. And now they're infiltrating. Now that's one part. The second part is this. This is from something I just received before I went on the show. This is breaking news about an MFA investigation. It leads to 21 criminal animal cruelty charges. Quote, hidden camera video footage secretly recorded by an MFA investigator has led to 21 criminal cruelty to animals charges against the owner, two managers, and five employees of the Ontario Livestock Sales, one of the oldest and largest livestock auctions in Southern California. The shocking video shows downed animals, those too sick or injured to even move or stand, being left to suffer without food or water and die, and also being kicked, pulled, and beaten. And then it goes on to talk about all the other animals that had been suffering. And then an USDA welfare advisor said, quote, the handling was very rough and kicking animals is not acceptable. If this auction had been a federally inspected meatpacking plant, they would have suspended inspection, shut them down, end quote. Now, here's what's important about this. Historically, those of us who are in animal rights, and myself as a vegan and an animal rights activist, we could get a copy of something like that, get it into the media, and somebody would pay attention, but no one in the mainstream media would, not left or right. Now, that constitutes an act of terrorism. The new law signed by Obama is that if you go onto a farm or any operational business, and if you take a photograph of, record, or video any cruelty to any animals, you are the one arrested for terrorism and not the person who committed the crime against the animals. You, for exposing the crime, are now the target. And that is now the law. So right now, anyone filming any animal cruelty on anyone's property, you will be deemed by the FBI a terrorist. So that is a very serious situation. And finally, this comes from Fairwinds president, who is the organic farm in Portland, stopped producing food after radiation tests. Quote, very frightening what happened on the West Coast. And then this discussion in video, they show that there was radiation coming down in the rain, British Columbia, Seattle, that all of Washington, Oregon, and part of California, that that a major organic farm, one of the largest organic farms, then tested the soil, found out that it was radioactive, and yet the mainstream media would not touch this. And now the people who put this information out, including the people on the organic farm who stopped producing up in Portland, are now under suspect. Why? Because they're doing something that affects the United States, its image. We don't have any problem with radiation. Fukushima didn't cause a problem here. Oh, yes, it did. Yes, it did. And now consuming fish from the Pacific, consuming food from Oregon, even Oregonians are not aware of this, and yet they tested the soil and voluntarily stopped growing at the organic farm in Portland because of this. Now, when you tell that kind of truth, even you're not whistleblowing, you're simply telling the truth, now you're on a list. So these are the things that put us on a list today, and once you're on those lists, you have no control over what will happen to you. And I don't believe that we should take any comfort in the fact that we have not yet been arrested, that Chris Hedges has not yet been disappeared, that you have not yet ended up disappeared, that we should think that somehow this is just a corporate and military issue instead of a human rights issue that could metastasize into the greatest malignancy of our freedom Americans have ever seen. Your response, Dr. Scott, please.
Well, I'm more qualified to respond to your first point than your second, which I'm learning about from you and I was not aware of. On this question of being listed as a terrorist, you're talking to one right now. I am listed on the Internet as a defender of terrorism. It's because I spoke to a class in Washington shortly after 9/11, and somebody tape recorded what I said, and I said, whatever you call these people, don't call them cowards, which incidentally Rick Santorum has also said. So if I'm a terrorist or a defender of terrorists, so is he. And the other thing I said, which I think is wisdom going back to antiquity, that what goes around comes around. So I am listed as a defender of terrorism. I suspect that it was the FBI, first of all, taped my call, and secondly, leaked it to a right-wing organization who put it on the web, because that's what they did back in the Vietnam War. What am I guilty of, in fact? I'm totally nonviolent. I helped create a program at Berkeley in order to teach nonviolence. I criticize almost everybody in sight because most mass movements aren't nearly as committed to nonviolence as I am, and I write books. So if somebody like me can be put on a list as a defender of terrorism, I think we have to turn it around and all compete to make sure we're all on lists. And once we have, say, half the population of America on lists, then maybe we'll be in a position to finally put 1 or 2 million people in the streets and affect some significant change to this thing, because it's going to have to change. It's either going to get very much worse, or America's going to find the social resources to do something about this. And I think one of the things that we have to do is to get people to be willing to be on lists and to be willing to be seen out in public and doing things like photographing police violence and so on. The more people do it, the more we'll get to the point where we can do something about it.
I appreciate your insights there. They are profound, and your commitment to peace and the truth is remarkable. I would simply add that I believe that before you'll see 2 million people taking the streets in America, you'd have to have 2 million people arrested to awaken them. So I don't believe until the arrests come, until the collapse comes, the economic collapse, when they start to actually wake up from the fog that they have been, as a Professor Peter Phillips said, the fog of this distraction of bread and circuses, the reality shows, and realize that this is not a reality game, this life we're living, that we're not going to get their attention, but I thank you for that. My final comments and question for you, Professor Peter Phillips, is this. Could you address the same question I ask Dr. Scott? How is it that on the left we could have unions that say that we're for the workers, yet I have not seen those unions orchestrate a national call for national strikes against the militarization of our police, the evisceration of constitutional rights? I see them organize, and rightly so, and I support that for collective bargaining and the rights of unions. I'm pro-union, but I haven't seen the unions be, as a mass, be pro our constitutional rights here. And also on the right, when people talk constantly, incessantly, and wearing their flag, they're doing just the opposite to end up causing that flag to be nothing more than a shroud. I don't see where any of the people currently in the media, any of them, are doing anything to actively challenge the suppression of all the inequalities we've been talking about when it comes to the evisceration of our civil liberties, because the very people who are handling this are the Republican and conservative political and economic heads in Washington. Your thoughts, please.
We're seeing some matching up of unions, SEIU, and the Teamsters with Occupied in various capacities. We did close down the port of Oakland with cooperation from the unions here last fall for a day. But there's still a lot of work that needs to be done in that area. When Peter talked about fascism, I agree that it's a different form of fascism than the Nazis and the jackboots. But you would have to ask the 80,000 people who were stopped and searched and frisked in New York last year for nothing, by the police on the street, to just walk, just being there and present, 80% black and brown, are just being stopped every day. And, you know, that's an interference. That's a complete involvement. And the FBI now has 15,000 undercover agents working, you know, at $100,000 per assignment, infiltrating groups all over the country, where they will infiltrate a community with suspect-minded individuals, encourage the suspects to carry out attacks. They'll provide weaponry, funds, and a plan, and then bust them before anything happens, supposedly. But most of the major terrorist plots in the U.S. that have been uncovered, the New York subway plot, the Chicago Sears Tower, and many others, have been encouraged by and promoted by FBI infiltrators in those groups. So we've got this combination of FBI pushing leftists to engage in illegal activities, and a constant street presence of police officers looking at anybody as suspicious, let alone stopping and searching cars willy-nilly anywhere in the country under supposed DUI and, you know, things. Our Fourth Amendment rights are gone. So there's a whole array of things that are very fascist.
Well, both of you have made major contributions to this area. I'm hopeful that this program, which is the most downloaded radio program in the United States in radio, will be heard by countless individuals who will realize we have no more time to sit by. I also think it would be an interesting moment if we could see those who've championed nonviolence, such as both of you have, and Dr. Scott, you say you've had a lifetime of civil disobedience and nonviolent causes. Take three characters from history who were nonviolent, at least two for their entire lives, one at the end of their life, Martin Luther King and Gandhi and Malcolm X. Today, you realize that those three were outside the White House locking arms, protesting genetic engineering, for example. Imagine what the president would say if, looking out the window, a Nobel Prize winner had to confront a Nobel Prize winner and see whether or not that person represented a threat to the security of the United States, and to have him arrested or assassinated. Interesting concept, isn't it?
Man. Absolutely.
It is, and yet we don't even think in this way of how absurd the notion is that people who claim one thing and do just the opposite, claim a renewal of freedoms and then do everything possible to create murky, turbidity, and non-transparency. You all have given us enlightenment. I appreciate it. Thank you very much, Professor Peter Phillips. Thank you very much, Peter Del Scott, for being with us today.
Thank you.
And we are going to take a brief break on the Progressive Commentary Hour. Come back with my extended interview that will come from Stephen Ledman, a little different focus, and I will share with you a commentary on Police State USA, the paranoid style of American governance, and I'm going to encourage you to call in your thoughts. It is a segment I normally don't take calls on our Progressive Commentary Hour, but because we're doing an extended version on a topic that I know many of you have feelings about, if you would wish to call in right after break, we are going to take your calls at 888-874-4888, 888-874-4888, 888-874-4888. If there are calls, I'll take them. If not, we'll go to commentary and then my guest. To welcome all of you back, I'm Gary Nall, and you're listening to the Progressive Commentary Hour. My guest now is Stephen Ledman. He is a graduate of Harvard and has an MBA from Wharton School of Economics. He has a very successful background in economic theory and practice, and he has committed his entire adult life to understand the problems that we have. He is a full-time activist, and he has one of the most popular programs on the Progressive Radio Network, and I suggest that you download some of his shows. Nice to have you with us today, Stephen.
Oh, good to be with you, Gary.
Stephen, before we get to specifically your experience in understanding how we have become a police state, in effect, not just a creeping form of fascism, but galloping fascism, and why the American public has been asleep at the wheel. Just one comment from Glenn Greenwald, as written in Common Dreams, how extremism is normalized. Obama's radical interpretation of the Bill of Rights. And he says this: there is one important passage from the New York Times article on President Obama's personal issuance of secret due process free death sentences that I failed to highlight, despite twice writing about that article. And that is that the record calls for more attacks, presented Mr. Obama with an urgent question. Could he order the targeted killing of an American citizen in a country in which the United States was not at war, in secret without the benefit of a trial? The Justice Department Office of Legal Counsel prepared a lengthy memo justifying that extraordinary step, asserting that while the Fifth Amendment's guarantee of due process applied, it would be satisfied by internal deliberations in the executive branch. Mr. Obama gave his approval, and the man was killed in September of 2011, along with a fellow propagandist, an American citizen who was not on the target list but was traveling with him. Here we have the Obama administration asserting what I genuinely believe, without hyperbole, is the most extremist government interpretation of the Bill of Rights I've heard in my lifetime, that the Fifth Amendment's guarantee that the state cannot deprive you of your life without due process of law is fulfilled by completely secret, oversight-free internal deliberations by the executive branch, and it's now barely something anyone even notices when the New York Times reports it. Please just reread that bolded part. This is something that we already know, that the New York Times' Charlie Savage had previously reported that Obama's lawyers, David Barron and Marty Lenderman, had authored a secret document that, quote, provided the justification for acting despite an executive order banning assassinations, the federal law against murder, protections in the Bill of Rights, and various strictures of the international laws of war. And yet, there is none of that now. Now, that's what he's saying. So, in effect, what we have today, unless I've missed something, is due to all the executive orders and all the laws including the National Defense Authorization Act, the President of the United States, without any discussion with anyone else, or with discussions with people that we will never know who they are, their background, their biases, what agenda they actually have, coming from private industries that may benefit from killing someone, can now decide who they're going to kill them, and have no one who is going to be held accountable at no time, not now or in the future. We also have the FBI now targeting anyone who exposes dangers to animals, the abuses of animals, the torture of animals on American farms, factory farms, that anyone who exposes that, takes a picture of it, a video of it, reports it, is now put on a terrorist watch list. This is the FBI. And now you're a terrorist. We also have, from Freedom of Information documents, that New York City Police, working with its police commissioner specifically, and the Homeland Security, have been targeting, under the direct supervision of the White House, the Obama White House, all of the Occupy activists. They are to be photographed wherever possible, get eye scans, pupil scans, retinal scans, to identify them and to be put on a terrorist watch list. That we have now American soldiers being prepared to arrest and detain indefinitely without trial or without charges anyone they deem is a threat by just civil disobedience, meaning marching. We have a recent law passed that if you want to protest, let's say, a foreign dictator who comes to the UN and you want to stand outside the UN and protest, now that could be perceived of as a terrorist act. So they have created language and some language that is not specific but is generalized enough that they can use it on their behalf that makes it virtually illegal to challenge corporations, governmental agencies, governmental officials who have done wrong, the police, to photograph a police shooting and killing and beating someone, can now you can be arrested for that and put in jail. So that is where we're at. And yet this entire time, the unions have done nothing. The school teachers' unions, all these unions that want us to back them, and I'm a big union supporter, they've done diddly squat, nothing. Because the heads of these unions are corporatist, even though the rank and file may not be. But the rank and file doesn't move without the leadership. We have so many people on the left who claim that they're for the people. And we have a whole right. The Republican Party says, we're for constitutional rights. We're for our founding fathers. Then you would be out there saying, today, George Washington, Alexander Hamilton, Benjamin Franklin, Thomas Jefferson, Thomas Paine would all be arrested and be on a terrorist watch list or assassinated by the president. And we all know that. Because they incited a revolution. And they incited the government of the United States, the formation of a new government, to go against the rulers in England. So they would all be terrorists. The entire movement to free the civil rights movement would be terrorist. The entire women's movement would be terrorist. So you look at all the movements we've had and all the leaders of those movements, today they would fall under one of these restrictions. And yet when we say, well, okay, we're for our rights, we're against big government. No, you're not. You're a liar. You just allowed the biggest amount of money in the history of the United States, in fact, the history of the world, for a single agency, the military and defense and spy agencies, to have more money than ever in their history, $1.4 trillion, to have more power than ever before, all in secret, all with for-profit corporations, privatized corporations to run all this, and take away our rights. And you haven't raised a finger. You haven't gone to a demonstration. You haven't told your listeners and viewers that they should be opposed to people listening illegally on their telephones, reading their emails, arresting them if they protest. So where is the truth in the Republican and the Democratic movements? Well, it doesn't exist. They're sociopaths, in my opinion. Those are my thoughts. Now, Stephen, yours.
Well, Gary, I certainly agree with everything you said, and I have written on much of this. I must say that what's going on now isn't new. The difference is, over the years, it gets more extreme. As bad as it was post 9/11 under George Bush, it's even worse under Obama. I like to say, and I like to write, that Obama has disappointed his supporters who've been paying attention, that they saw great hope in him. Bush was gone. The great black hope arrived. Chicago in November, election night 2008, the city erupted like New Year's Eve. It was an astonishing mass display. Offices emptied out early in the afternoon so people could go out and celebrate Obama's victory. Well, I had written about him before the election. I discussed his time as a senator in Illinois, state senator. I mainly talked about his voting record in the Senate, and I had no illusions about the great Obama coming into office. The only thing that surprised me is just how bad he turned out. But you could go back in U.S. history, Gary. You could go back to the beginning and see terrible oppression against activists. My God, I mean, farmers back in the days of Washington, Jefferson, John Adams, protesting for their rights and being brutalized as a result of it. Go back to the beginning of World War One. Woodrow Wilson, the great Democrat. We got the Espionage Act under him. It said anybody who does anything to interfere with U.S. military operations, including protesting America's involvement in the war, could be arrested on espionage charges. And you had unionists targeted, the industrial workers of the world, the Wobblies, were destroyed by brutal tactics. You had the Great Red Scare in the 1920s. I mean, people who just wanted to live decent civil rights, decent lives, were targeted for their activism. And they were arrested, and they were mistreated. And this went on and on and on. You had the un-American activities during the Cold War, the 1940s. You had the jihad against Hollywood activists. People arrested. They lost their careers. You know, the McCarthy area, I've written about this. And then you go on. Post 9/11, Gary, it really got ratcheted up severely. The gloves came off. No holds barred. The Bill of Rights really only were enforced when the powers that be decided that they would be enforced. Otherwise, people could be arrested, detained, brutalized for any reason at all. But post 9/11, it really changed dramatically. At the end of 2008, I did a year-end review article. I like to do year-end reviews. The last 3 years, Bush's last year, I did a summation of his tenure as president. In each of Obama's first 3 years, I did a year-end review. In December, I'll do a review of year four. I mean they read like horror stories. If anybody has illusions about Obama being better than anyone they can think of, read my articles. They're based on fact. They're based on the laws that passed. They're based on the decisions he made. It's all factual. I didn't make this stuff up. And anybody can read it, and they can see what a nightmare this guy is. And I like to use a line occasionally. If he's reelected, just imagine what's coming in a second term when he's a lame duck and he doesn't have to worry about being reelected. But post 9/11, I wrote, end of 2008, I wrote an article I called Police State America, Gary. I went through all the laws that passed through the time frame that I was dealing with, starting with the Patriot Act, the Homeland Security Act. I went through presidential orders, executive orders, so-called national security and homeland security presidential directives that was really diktat government. Bush used a term called unitary executive. Unitary executive, it basically meant I'm the president, what I say goes. If I want to go to war, if I want to target somebody for any reason, I'm the boss, and what I say goes. And that's what he meant by a unitary executive. Obama doesn't use the term, but he functions the same way. Diktat authority. Earlier, he said that anyone can be detained indefinitely, held in Guantanamo or any place else, by his authority alone. not by judicial authority, not by the Congress, by his say, so-and-so can be held indefinitely, and if we want to, we can keep him there untried for the rest of his life, for the rest of her life. They have nothing to say about it. The Military Commissions Act basically did that for people at Guantanamo and others if they were to be charged. That act was also called the Torture Act, and it was renewed. That was 2006, October 17. I call that a day of infamy. It was renewed, I believe, in 2009. So under Obama, it was renewed. Key provisions of the Patriot Act were renewed. The Patriot Act, for the first time, enacted the crime of domestic terrorism, Gary. That never existed until the Patriot Act, and that went after the animal rights activists, the environmental activists, and if they want to, against you and me for speaking out, for writing, for saying the truth, and they can call us a terrorist. They can come after us. They can detain us forever illegally. They can our family may not know where we are. No one knows what happened to us. We can stay untried. The military can arrest us and throw us in a military dungeon. On the last day of last year, Gary, Obama signed the National Defense Authorization Act. It had two provisions in it. There were police state laws. Both to the effect that anybody could be arrested by the U.S. military anywhere in the world, charged, uncharged, tried, untried, held indefinitely. What kind of a country calling itself a democracy governs that way? And this is Obama.
Okay.
Bush didn't do that.
All right,
Obama did it.
But let us be realistic. You're showing some concern, and you're being specific of which acts and what it does. But let's say today that you're an average person listening to NPR and listening to some of the MSNBC people like Rachel Maddow, or maybe Bill O'Reilly and Sean Hannity. On both sides, the traditional left has said that their liberal policies, the corporate left I'm talking about now, the liberal policies mean that they would be opposed to any form of corruption involving our constitutional rights and guarantees they have protected through civil rights, protest, and women's rights, and South African apartheid rights, and Native American rights. They have lobbied heavily and put themselves in harm's way to protect those. On the right, you have the Republicans saying that we're for America and our constitutional values. We're constitutionalists. We believe in the Bill of Rights. All right? On both sides, we've only seen Clinton take away the Glass-Steagall Act, open up the world to globalization and neoliberal politics, the exploitation of resources and privatization all across the globe. And yet he was elected twice and was the love child of the left. On the right, you have George Bush Jr., voted in twice. And once again, you had the constant taking away of our rights. You had the increasing, the military-industrial complex, the biggest subsidies in history for special interest groups. And yet, where were those people saying, we don't like socialism? But you had socialism. You had socialism for the wealthy. When a corporation was faltering, instead of allowing it to go through structured bankruptcy, it was bailed out, $16 trillion. And yet, no one said boo-hoo to that. No one said we should stop giving the nuclear industry and the coal and the gas industry and the oil industry their subsidies, or cargo and the we'll pay you for not planting, or we'll subsidize your planting with the big agri. No one poo-hooed when Obama met secretly his administration repeatedly with the largest groups of for-profit insurance companies and the hospital for-profit groups and the drug makers, and crafted together a Obama healthcare plan that only helps the major people make trillions of dollars at our expense but doesn't make us any healthier. And yet both groups claim to be for something that I'm not seeing them actually addressed. I see people who were once loyal Democrats and liberals and all conservative and Republicans banning those positions, becoming independent, and from independent going into the libertarian or constitutional or green or justice or freedom movements, or becoming more progressive, seeking solutions. So would you address this seeming hypocrisy, or at least at the very least confusion, between what a person claims that they're going to do and then just take an honest look at both the Republican and Democratic parties, that they haven't allowed any constructive change that helps the average person? They haven't stopped home foreclosures. They haven't forgiven student debt. They haven't stopped predatory lending. They haven't stopped derivatives. They haven't stopped credit default swaps. They haven't stopped privatization efforts. So I don't see anything, from genetic engineering our food to the taking away of our rights to take vitamins, to increasing longer prison sentences for nonviolent crimes, to keep the beds filled in for-profit private prisons in our country, to stopping the lobbying, to stopping the money in. I see nothing, zero. I don't see a centimeter of authentic change that actually represents what would benefit the average American. Show me, please, where I'm in error.
Oh, you're not in error, Gary. You're absolutely 100% right. And as bad as it was some years ago, it's so much worse now. The first 3.5 years under Obama matched the worst of George Bush's first 3.5 years and go beyond what he did. He literally has done things that no Republican would have dared to do. And I'm convinced that's the reason that the powers that be, I talk about the power structure that runs America, the people who get elected to top positions, not just president, but the key posts in Congress, the key court positions, mainly the Supreme Court, but other key federal courts, they are handpicked. They are servants of the power structure, and they obey and they do what they're told. And I've said that America could literally have Mickey Mouse sitting in the White House, and it wouldn't make a lick of difference. If the power structure decides they want something, they're going to get it. And the Bilderbergs, they had a meeting, I believe it began on Friday. I guess it ran on Saturday. Maybe it's still going today. I don't know the time frame exactly. But the Bilderberg, if you want to know what the power structure of the world is, Gary, there you have it. The elites of the Bilderbergs, and there is a core group, David Rockefeller, who is very, very aged now, but apparently still doing well enough to be the head man there. They have a nickname for him. They call him the Master Spider. If there's one person who has more power in the world than anybody else, it's David Rockefeller. He controls the money. J.P. Morgan Chase, his bank. He's got the oil money as well, but it's really the banking money. Whoever controls the money controls everything. The Rothschilds in the 19th century knew that. It doesn't matter what laws are passed. You control the money, and you literally have the power of the state in your hands. I wrote about this in my book, How Wall Street Fleeces America, and you're right. Nothing's been done to help ordinary people. The economic crisis that is a depression on Main Street, and U.S. poverty is at record levels. Who says it? The Census Bureau and the New York Times, of all places, months back, wrote about it, and what they quoted the Census Bureau saying, half of U.S. households are either impoverished are bordering on it, and the formula they use to calculate poverty, Gary, means that half of them are in poverty, because they say $22,500 for a family of four puts you right on the borderline for a family living in Chicago or New York or San Francisco. I don't know that one person can get by on that kind of income. Family of four? Of course not. It's impossible. My goodness, I mean, even in some of the poorer neighborhoods, the rents alone are extraordinary. High food prices, high energy prices, high medical costs, high transportation costs. Inflation is much higher than the reported numbers. Unemployment is close to 23%, not the phony 8.3%. people are suffering, Gary, and the politicians, instead of helping people as they did under FDR during the Great Depression when jobs were created, people got some income in their pockets and things were made better than they would have been otherwise. There's been nothing done under Obama, nothing done under George Bush. Things keep getting worse. I don't know how Obama hopes he's going to be reelected. I think the economy will be worse as we move ahead in the current months to November, and I've seen polls that show Romney ahead. Well, Romney, Obama, I don't think it makes a lick of difference. They vary on some things. Everything is important. Gay rights are important. Stem cell research is important. But they don't rise to the level of war and peace, police state laws targeting anybody who speaks out, corporate empowerment, food that isn't safe to eat. These are the big issues. These are major, major issues. Our basic rights under the Constitution that have been trashed. George Bush called the Constitution, and he was caught. He didn't want to be quoted on this, but it came out. George Bush called the Constitution a G-damn piece, just a G-damn piece of paper. Quote, unquote, George Bush.
Well, he had to call it that because he wouldn't have been able to understand the words written on it. I don't think he's able to read. Here's what I think it comes down to. I think we have to simplify this. Let's make it very basic. Whoever controls the seeds controls what is grown. Hence, you control food. They're the genetic engineering companies, about six of them, but led by Monsanto and DuPont and Bayer. They are in control. They've got their people in the White House and over 100 different major political appointees in Justice Department and the FDA and USDA. So they're in power. They control that. They work with ALEC and get the rules written. Whoever controls the currency and the exchange and the debt controls our future. Well, that's the 12 independent banks, all for profit, that own the money that comes in from the Federal Reserve. The Federal Reserve is nothing more than a handmaiden of those. They gave $16 trillion out at interest free and took in bad and junk and toxic assets that have gone bad and used those as collateral. That's a form of legal money laundering. But not a single American small business person, not one single American losing their home or student who was out of college and couldn't get a job and now was being harassed by the credit companies could get a break. They didn't get the $16 trillion, but Citigroup got over $2 trillion. Bank of America got $3 trillion. And so we saw where the money went. So now they got the money supply. In fact, most Americans aren't aware of this, and Stephen, that we are paying over $500 billion a year just on interest on the national debt. That's just interest. Did you ever ask, where does that $500 billion come from? Who do we pay it to? We're paying, we mean the Treasury, gets money from the Federal Reserve, and the Federal Reserve then gives interest-free money to the major banks. The banks are borrowing money at 0.2% interest or zero interest, hundreds of billions of dollars. They then give that money as a loan to the Treasury to pay down the interest on the debt. They're given a fee for doing that. It could be up to 3.2%. But hold on a second. Let's just look at this. The money never actually goes into their bank account, but they have the right then to give that money to the Treasury to pay it down. It's a circle. So they're given money that costs them zero. They're paying the interest on the debt, which is at 3%. They just made 300% profit. Now, when you're dealing in numbers in the $500 billion, a half a trillion, at 3%, you're making an astronomical profit. And yet, you didn't have to spend a nickel. It was all done on a keyboard. Now, that is what the American public doesn't understand. They don't understand basic finance. They don't understand how the game is rigged. They don't understand credit default swaps. They don't understand that people are hoping, praying, that Greece defaults, which it will, because after the June 15 election, when a new administration comes in and says no to the austerity measures, which is good for the Greece, it'll be temporarily bad because they'll go off the euro, but then they'll be able to revive their economy. Remember, when your currency is lower in price, you can then sell what's made in your country with a lower currency value against China. against Taiwan, against Mexico. You can then compete. You could have a tourist go to Greece and spend a week at one of your beautiful hotels and enjoy your cuisine and your customs and your culture for half the price it would under the euro. So where no one's going to Greece now in tourism at this time of year because of social unrest and because of the high cost, now they can. And it will take them a couple years, but just like Iceland, Iceland is so solvent today after saying no, they forgave all mortgages in the country. Now that shows you how they got back on their feet real fast in under a year and a half. So don't say it can't be done. It can be done, but they're painting a worse face on it. But what the American people are not aware of is that there are people who are positioned with credit default swaps for Greece. They've invested for Greece to go broke. So when Greece goes broke, they invest $1, they can get 10 in return. But they didn't invest a dollar. They invested $400 billion. So 400 billion times 10 is 4 trillion. Well, there's not $4 trillion to give them back. So who's going to pay for it? European Central Bank, Federal Reserve, the American taxpayer. We won't know any of this, but this is what the story is going to be. The smart money is bet against Spain, Italy, Portugal, Greece, and Ireland, and then watch the money come in. Just like people bet against the subprime mortgage market, and one guy made $7 billion. And then the next year, I think $4 billion. So, whoever controls that money, and instead of abolishing the Federal Reserve and letting the Treasury print money and pay debt at zero interest, we could be saving $500 billion a year there. Then, whoever controls campaign financing controls the outcome of elections. Right now, the price of getting elected, not the price, the cost of getting elected, it's about $1.4 billion. So they're going to, between both people, they're going to spend over $2 billion. But who would put up this money? Not local people. It's bundled. Wall Street will be the biggest bundler. With that will come massive amounts of money and also secret super PAC that don't have to identify themselves. And now foreign governments, based upon Citizens United, can invest in our election process. So remember this, and this is the takeaway here. Who is selected are the only ones elected. You have to be selected before you can be elected. And no regular people have been selected for any election. It is, you're selected, you go through the grooming process. Go back to Clinton's earlier career where he was selected by William Fulbright and got his scholarship without having the brains to get it legitimately. Go back and look at Winthrop Rockefeller, the governor of Arkansas, where Clinton was, who was groomed from a young age. He was in the Trilateral Commission, Council on Foreign Relations in Bilderberg before he was 25 years old. He was selected and groomed. And once you're in that circle, you can't fail. But also when you're in that circle, you have to write the rules and laws that allow them to make trillions of dollars off of you. And literally, with the World Trade Organization, trillions of dollars being made. So all of this seems like it's too confusing and too complex, but it's not. So now you control the media. You buy the media. So you control the message. Then you buy these prima donna, dilettantes, the people that you pay very nice salaries and you get them popular on the left and the right. They're the official spokespersons for the left and the right. And they keep the arguments narrowed, but never on important topics, never on anything where they could have a progressive mind on that would just show them the foolishness of their positions. So now you control the message. You control food. Now you privatize water. You control water. Now you privatize and support nuclear. So you control that. And you get out of the naturals, like a natural small wind generators. And you put no money into geothermal. You put no money into wave technology from the oceans and the rivers. And you minimize your solar, and you use a couple examples of bad management to self-dealing insider contracts, But that doesn't reveal the truth about solar. Why don't we look at Germany, where 60% of all the energy is in solar, but done correctly, not self-serving insiders getting half a billion dollars. Then you control the judicial process, and then you militarize the police. You militarize the TSA. So now if you start to rebel, there are laws that will prevent it. If you want food, you got to buy genetic engineered food. If you want supplements, you got to buy drugs because they control the medical model. So now you control the medical model to make anyone a disease entity. If you act out, it's social anxiety disorder. And therefore, you're mentally ill. Therefore, you must be taken into protective custody for your own good and that of society so you don't hurt anyone, and medically given intense medicines. So now they start early on making every teen take teen screen, or encouraging that, and then defining what is normal behavior. So now you've pathologized being a woman, you've pathologized pregnancy and menopause, you've pathologized being a child, you've pathologized social behavior, you have the control over the judiciary system because you control both the House and the Senate and the White House and the Supreme Court. Then through ALEC you control the state laws with it passing 800 state laws by writing the laws for these not very bright state legislators who are utterly, utterly contemptible. And so then one day you wake up, and where can you go? What can you do? What can you listen to? Where can you protest? What can you eat? What can you drink? What can you take to prevent disease? What kind of holistic doctor can you see? It's all gone. It's all gone. And you have no right to complain, because when those like yourself and Chris Hedges and even Chris Hayes, though he had to walk it back, I'm sorry he had to walk it back, but what he said was legitimate when he was criticizing Veterans Day. Now, all the activists have been picked up, but nobody paid attention, because, my God, how can I pay attention if Steven Lebman gets arrested and put in prison and we don't know about it because news is not going to cover it? I've got more important things to do if I'm the average American. I got priorities. My priorities are Jersey idiots and Donald Trump idiocy. We have priorities, so let's keep our priorities in order. We have, you know, we have the country western shows, and we got the Academy Awards. We have entertainment. We have comedy, or something that's supposed to be funny. We have our food. We have our fast foods, and we have our comfort foods, and we have our tranquilizers, and we have... So where do we have time or interest in thinking about any of this stuff? It's just too confusing. I hear this kind of show, I got to go home now if I'm the average person, and I got to take my Prozac, and then in the morning, then I can't sleep, so I got to take my little pill that allows me to sleep, and then I got to take something in the morning to get me up, and then caffeine, and then I got to go and do what I've done every day and live a repetitive life that I'm not happy with, in a relationship that I shouldn't have had, and work that is counterproductive and destructive, and vote for people who don't give a damn about me, but I want to believe they do, and watch media that acts like they care about me, but if I walk up to any of those prima donna plastic surgically enhanced people on the street, they're going to tell me, go away, who are you? And so I'll just go back to this maddening routine. Does that sound at all plausible, Stephen Litton?
Yeah, it sure does, Gary. We live in a dysfunctional society that's getting worse all the time, and you've got the unprecedented extremes between the tiny sliver of society that are the privileged. We can call them the 1%. It really is the 0.001%, a very tiny sliver of society. The middle class is being destroyed. It's shocking. No country that doesn't have a middle class has a democracy. No country that has the wealth extremes that America has a democracy. Justice Louis Brandeis made that point about you can either have a democracy or you can have the condition we have today, where you have these extreme wealth disparities, and under those conditions, democracy is impossible. Well, there is no democracy. We have an illusory democracy. We have illusory elections. We have this grand facade that's put up. we have an immensity of bread and circuses that distract people from the real things that touch their lives. When people worry more about the latest fashions, or where should we go to dinner tonight, or how about going to the ball game, or who won, and when they worry about things like that, and they don't worry about their own futures, or the futures of their children, or their grandchildren, then we have a very sick society heading dismally down. And then you compound that with all the police state laws and the harshness, and you dare to speak out and exercise what you think are your legal rights, and they come after you for doing it. Well, I mean, that sounds like we're heading for the worst of Nazi Germany or other tyrannical countries. And I truly believe, Gary, that we are one more serious terrorist attack away from the Constitution officially being suspended, from martial law being declared, and that's the final coup de grace, and the illusion comes off, and the hardness is revealed, the mask is stripped away, and there you have it, and people will be convinced by smooth-talking, snake-oil selling politicians that we're only doing this for your benefit, to protect you. You know, we put these police state laws on the books to benefit you. We fight these imperial wars, and we call them liberating ones. It goes on and on, Gary. And the shocking thing is that most people buy this stuff instead of getting enraged and going out in the streets. We saw it during the Vietnam era in the 1960s and early 1970s. And even then, it took years to end that bloody war. It's so simple to end the war if you can get the attention of decent, half-decent people, reasonably decent people in Congress. The way that war ended, the Vietnamese didn't win that war. The American people on the streets really didn't win the war, except they got the attention of the Congress. The Congress ended the war when they finally cut off the funding, and that was the end. It took a little while to get the troops out. April 1975, it all ended. And by the way, Panetta showed up in Vietnam at Cam Ranh Bay, where America had a major base, a deep water port. And Vietnam, astonishingly, after what we did to that country, they fought a 30-year war against America, against the French, against the Allies. They were decimated. The people are still suffering today. 37 years after that war ended, the Vietnamese people are still suffering. They're still getting limbs blown off on landmines. The Agent Orange is still making
Stephen,
people very ill. And the Vietnamese welcomed Leon Panetta to become an ally in maybe establishing a U.S. base to target China.
Well, it shows you some things don't change. Stephen Ledman, we're out of time. And I want to thank Dr. Ledman, Dr. Scott, and Dr. Phillips, for being on and sharing their points of view. Now, I'm going to remain with you for a few more moments because I want to share a commentary. And then, as promised earlier, but we didn't have the time, go to your call. So please feel free now. You've had enough input. You can certainly form some opinions. And on our talkback segment, we invite you to share your points of view at 888-874-4888. Americans typically comfort themselves in the notion that they live in a democracy with a government that is rational, responsible, and accommodative of their needs. Yet what if the government Americans look to for protection and personal liberty, the creation and enforcement of fair and just laws, and defense of the nation's borders and interests abroad exist not in the real world, but exist in their minds? What if our deep suspicions and conspiratorial fantasies we've been talking about for the past 2 hours are real? The New York Times Health Guide explained a prevailing symptom of paranoid personality disorder as being, quote, highly suspicious of other people. Yes, well, what if those other people deserve that? What if, in fact, our entire political process deserves to be looked at upon with suspicion? Does the New York Times not understand the power of ALEC and the corporate interests that were working against the American public's interests, meeting with state legislators to pass over 800 laws that protected the special interest groups at the cost to the American public? Indeed, the United States' dramatic increase in suspicion and contempt towards any of us over the last several decades, combined with this accelerated violent and criminal aggression towards innocents at home and abroad, indicates a potential onset of what might even be deemed a paranoid state. With the development of such a condition, the United States as a whole suffers from acute delusions of persecution and then becomes transformed by its illusionary forces that it perceives as seeking to inflict harm on him. Hence, an innocent farmer selling raw milk, a group of people tending to a farmer's market selling sprouts, a person advocating for freedom of speech, all then are perceived of as the enemy. This advanced stage of national illness may have been triggered by the violent terrorist attacks of September 11, 2001, one that the subject immediately blamed on a set of previous associates, Osama bin Laden and his mercenary group, known as Al-Qaeda. But what does it tell us about us now? Here are pieces of legislation and programs and actions, by no means exhaustive, to illustrate the unfortunate yet steady advance in the paranoid style of American governance that, especially since 2011, has placed both the subject and all who come in contact with it at risk of serious injury or death. The Alien Enemies Act of 1798 gave President of the United States power to apprehend and deport resident aliens if their home countries were at war with the United States. With no sunset provision, the act is intact today. The Sedition Act of 1798 made it a crime to publish any malicious writing against the government of the United States. It was enacted July 14, 1798, with expiration date of March 3, 1801, the day before John Adams' presidential term was to end. The Espionage Act of 1917 made it a crime to interfere with the war effort, with any military recruitment, and with any attempt to aid any nation that we were at war with. The Sedition Act of 1918 extended the act to cover a broader range of offenses. Notably, you could be arrested and imprisoned if you spoke or expressed opinion that cast our government in a negative light. The Executive Order 9066-1942 authorized internment of tens of thousands of American citizens of Japanese ancestry and resident aliens from Japan. Also authorized transporting these citizens to assembly centers hastily set up and governed by the militaries of California, Arizona, and Washington State and Oregon. The Executive Order 9066 was combined with other wartime orders and restrictions to smaller numbers of residents in the United States, like Italian and German descendants. Operation Garden Plot, RX-84. General plan by the United States military to respond to major domestic civil disturbances within the U.S. by suspending U.S. Constitution and declaring martial law. It developed in response to the civil disorders of the 1960s, and now would be carried out by the U.S. Northern Command that my guest earlier talked about, NORTHCOM. Executive Order 12148 in 1979 created the Federal Emergency Management Act, or FEMA, that it is to interface with the Department of Defense for civil defense planning and funding. The bulk of FEMA funding utilized for construction of secret underground facilities to assure continuity of government in case of emergencies. Executive Order 12656, 1988, appointed the National Security Council as principal body to consider emergency powers, allows the government to increase domestic intelligence surveillance on our citizens. Omnibus Counterterrorism Act of 1995 allows U.S. government to use evidence from secret sources in deportation proceedings for aliens suspected of anything. The Model States Emergency Health Powers Act of 2001 calls for giving state public health officials broad new police powers. U.S. Patriot Act 2001 that we spoke about earlier on the program. It is virtually allowing the United States government unchecked surveillance powers to look at your personal records, monitor your financial transactions, look at every transaction in a bank, all your student activities, grades, medical histories, everything. It was called Sneak and Peek, and it searches everything. Roving wiretaps, email tracking, internet, cell phone monitoring. Then we have the establishment of the United States Department of Homeland Security in 2001, created in response to the 9/11 attack. The establishment of the Transportation Safety Authority Act, the federal establishment of state and local fusion centers in 2004, the John Warner Defense Authorization Act, H.R. 5122 in 2007 allows the U.S. President to declare a public emergency and station troops, American troops, anywhere in America, and take control of state-based National Guard units without the consent of the governor or local authorities. Hence, they will allow no public disorder. The National Defense Authorization Act, signed on New Year's Eve, puts domestic investigations and interrogations in the hands of the military, allowing for stripping of due process and indefinite detention of anyone, including American citizens, based on U.S. government claims that they are terrorists. The Strategic Implementation Plan of 2011, the Communities Against Terrorist Program 2011, where the FBI and Department of Justice campaigned to enlist workers in 25 industries to spy on fellow workers, to spy, citizen, spy on citizen, and report all their findings of any unusual behavior to the federal authorities. Citizens spying upon citizens from hotel, motel personnel, and shops, car and property rental agents, tattoo parlors, gun dealers, everywhere. Spyware in home appliances, 2012. All new online devices provide a treasure trove of data to U.S. intelligence for personal use of their own. You have the Executive Order for Food Resources, 2012, with the National Defense Resource Preparedness. They can take any oil, gas, food, anything from you, and you can say nothing about it. The Department of Homeland Security purchased enough ammunition to eliminate the entire population of the United States this year. They did that, 500 million rounds of high-powered ammunition for 40 caliber firearms. President Obama's assassination list that we talked about earlier in the show, and finally the U.S. military to launch armed drones domestically this year. The National Defense Authorization Act set stage for U.S. military to arm up to 30,000 drones to fly over our skies. And therefore, at every moment of every day, we will be watched. I'm Gary Nall. That concludes my commentary. I have a few moments left for your calls. Give us a call at 888-874-4888. Let's take a look and say hello to Henry from California. Hi, Henry.
Hi. Gary, you probably could help me, but I've been troubled by something for a number of years. Prior to the Gulf War, it was reported that April Glaspy, who was a U.S. representative in Iraq, had been approached by Saddam Hussein complaining about something in Kuwait. I don't know what the complaint was. I've looked for it. I can't find out what the complaint was.
Here is exactly what happened. No one was aware that there was a transcript made from a tape recording of that meeting. That short meeting that has a very short transcript, it's only one page long, states that our ambassador was given assurances that we would not interfere in Saddam Hussein going into Kuwait. As a result, he took that as a green light and went into Kuwait, and then we immediately responded by being on the other side, protecting the interests of Kuwait and attacking Saddam Hussein. The question then is, did we in any way falsely assure him to go into battle, knowing full well that once he did, we would be able to attack him and gain some foothold in the area and control over his resources? The answer is unequivocally yes. The transcript speaks for itself. I will report on that transcript and actually cite it word for word tomorrow. Thank you for your call.
Okay.
Eric from New Jersey. Eric, your thoughts.
Hey, Gary. You know, why don't we just call it what it really is, the beginning of the same thing as what happened in Stalinist Russia, right? The communism, secret police, all that. And I heard also on the archives from Alan Watts, he mentioned that Lenin, back in the day, he said something, he quoted something something like, corporations between each other will eventually end up controlling the whole world because communism, based on how they capitalized the whole country, will eventually be born, or something like that. I don't remember. It was a great quote, but it was obviously much better than what I could remember now.
Your thoughts, however, are on point. The issue is not communism, Marxism, fascism, Stalinism, Maoism. These isms all represent a single point of focus: power. Power in the hands of those who act out as sociopathic and yet come across in the media as kind, sympathetic, understanding, and there only to protect our interest. Merely look for the truth, and you will see the last thing we need is any governmental agency, state, federal, or local, having any more power. Shame on the Democrats, the corporate Democrats. Shame on the Republicans, the corporate Republicans, for expanding the power of our government over our lives at a time when we should be redefining the relationship of a government into our life, and more importantly, not be fearful of our government. We are afraid of our government because of the excesses they can go, and we have not challenged them as we should. My hope with this two-hour program is that you'll find the confidence and courage to continue doing your homework and say no to them. Thank you very much for listening. I'm Gary Nall.